Yeah! Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Chandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
So welcome to Compass. We are in the middle of a series entitled Selfie, and we're going to kick off today. Last week, we did an all-church selfie. I had everybody take your phones out and take a selfie picture of yourself and put that up, with hashtag Compass Church. I realized this after I was looking at everybody's pictures, that a dark theater may not be the best environment for a selfie. Everyone looked really good. If by good, it means no one could really see your defects. So that was a positive. But this week, everyone grab your phone out. We're going to do something different just to start off today. I want everybody, we got some we're going to bring up on the screen. Everybody just take a picture of this with your phone. And then just as to kick off our selfie series, we're going to put this on your social media. So Twitter, Instagram, whatever, pick your poison, whatever works for you. Just take a snap. Just put that up. You can put hashtag Chris is handsome today, something like that, whatever tickles your fancy. So we're in the middle of a selfie series, and that means this. We're talking about social media and how social media affects our relationships. And in a lot of ways, social media is an extension of our identity and our relationships to the world at large. And so really, when we're talking about how we interact with the world through social media, we're talking about how do we interact with each other? I mean, how do we interact with people in general? And so one of the things that's interesting about social media, particularly Facebook, is when Facebook came out, they kind of started this new trend of identifying your relationship status, talking about whether you're married, whether you're single. And there's this status called It's Complicated that Facebook kicked out to begin with. Now, some of you guys know what It's Complicated means. Let me tell you, just from my own personal experience, what It's Complicated means. When Terry and I first started dating early in college, it was complicated. And, if you've been around, you may have heard this story a lot because maybe it's just me purging my guilt, just telling myself a little bit. But when Terry and I were first dating, I was really a terrible boyfriend because I just wasn't sure that she was the one. And so I was like, oh, babe, I really love you and I love hanging out with you. And I really did. I mean, I was sincere. But I always had that eye over her shoulder just in case God was going to bring that right person behind. Now, some of you girls are like, oh, you're a scumbag. A little bit. I mean, a little bit. That's just truth. And so because of that, we were in a relationship, but it was complicated because a lot of times relationships can just become that. And particularly when you start to nail down the details of your relationship, when you start to identify what it really means, like when you're just friends, it's not really that complicated. But once you start maybe dating a little bit or you're just hanging out a little bit more than usual, things start to get complicated. And so when I was a youth pastor, the whole like Facebook official dating thing, what I'm talking about? When something hits Facebook, it's Facebook official. And if it's not your status, you're not dating that person, okay? It's not Facebook official. And so the status on Facebook meant everything. And so once that status starts to get up there and relationship status starts to change, I think a lot of us, things start to get complicated. Because relationships in general they tend to be complicated. Now, last week we started talking about the life of Gideon, and you're going to find over the next several weeks through our selfie series, what we're going to do is we're going to look at the life of a guy named Gideon all the way through, and we're going to kind of pull from his life some of these principles that God has for us and how we live and with each other and how we deal with each other through social media. But last week we talked about Gideon, and we found out this. Gideon was a guy who was a little bit of a coward, and he was in a family of in Israel, and his family had no power, they had no prestige, they really had no money. They were just kind of nobodies. And Gideon was the biggest nobody out of a family of nobodies in a tribe of nobodies. And Gideon's living in Israel at the time, and this group of people called the Midianites, they were foreigners. They were coming into Israel year after year for like 7 years. And they would come, and they would basically kick the Israelites' butt, and they would take all their food and leave. We talked about this last week. It's like a bug's life. They come, they eat, they leave. And that's what they did. They would come in, and they would take the Israelites' food, and then they would go. And then the Israelites would wait another year. They would build new crops. They would develop, new livestock. And then Midianites would come back in, and they'd take everything. And so the Israelites were just in fear. They were living in caves. They were hiding food anywhere they could. They were just trying to survive because they could not defeat these Midianites. And Gideon, we find him, he's in the bottom of a wine press, which is just kind of a pit in the ground, which is low where no one can really see him. And he's threshing wheat, which needed to be done at the top of a hill so the wind could carry away all the crummy stuff of wheat and all the good stuff would fall to the ground. But he was hiding out because he was afraid, because Gideon was a coward. And an angel appears to him and calls him Mighty Hero. And Gideon's like, what are you talking about, Mighty Hero? I'm sitting here hiding out like a chicken. But God saw something in Gideon and said this, Gideon, listen. When I look at you, I don't see a coward. I have a new identity for you. I have a new relationship with me that we're going to start. And God told Gideon this. He said, I'm going to take you and I'm going to use you to get rid of the Midianites. I'm going to have you lead your people to freedom from the Midianites. And you're going to be set free from all of this. So Gideon's identity has been redefined by God. He has this new identity in God. And we talked about how, you know, God gives all of us a new identity when we look to him and we come into relationship with him. But when that new identity starts, right, when that new relationship with God starts, just like anything, like any other relationship, things can tend to get complicated. And things for Gideon are about to get complicated. So we're going to look at Judges chapter 6, 25 through 26. This is right after God has told him, you are a mighty hero and you're going to set the people of Israel free. Gideon's at a point where he's like, okay, God, I'm going to believe you. Okay, I'm going to go with this and I'm going to believe what you're telling me to do. And the story continues in Judges chapter 6. It says that night, the Lord said to Gideon, same night, you know, right after this all happened, take the second bull from your father's herd, the one that's 7 years old, pull down your father's altar to Baal and cut down the Asherah pole standing beside it. Then build an altar to the Lord your God here on this hilltop sanctuary, laying the stones carefully. Sacrifice the bull as a burnt offering on the altar, using as fuel the wood of the Asherah pole that you cut down. So here's Gideon. God's told him that he's going to be a hero, that he's going to set his people free. And then right out of the gate, complication. Okay? The Lord appears to Gideon and says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go out into your father's land, and he's got this altar to Baal. Actually, bring that picture up, will you guys? So he's got an altar to Baal, and next to it is an Asherah pole. Now, Baal and Asherah are pagan gods. They are the gods of the Canaanite people, the people who lived in the land before Israel. And so these are idols, these are false gods. And just some interesting background on the reason Israel is where they are. When Israel came into the land of Canaan, this land that God had promised them and that God said he was going to give to them, he said, here, you're going to take this and you're going to be blessed. You're going to live a great, fantastic life. I'm going to provide for you and I'm going to be your God and things are going to go well for you on one condition. One condition. You get rid of all the foreign gods. Don't touch them. Don't mess with them. Don't look at them. If you get rid of foreign idols, you get rid of these foreign gods, and you follow me as your one true God, then everything's going to be a cakewalk for you. We're going to do this together, and it's going to be good. But if you look to foreign gods, it's not going to go well. Things are going to go badly for you. And so we find the Israelites, and where are they? What are they doing? They're worshiping foreign gods. Baal, the Canaanite god, he was the deity of basically everything. He was the god of nature and of people, and they believed that Baal was in kind of control of people's lives, and he kind of dictated everything that was going to happen. And then Asherah was this pagan fertility goddess. And so what would happen is they would have an altar to Baal, they would make sacrifices to him, and they would burn them up on the altar. And then if Baal was pleased with their sacrifices, you know, he would take care of them, he would provide for them. And then Asherah, as the fertility goddess, she made sure they had good crops, that the livestock grew, and the livestock was taken care of. And so they would build these totem poles, really, for Asherah. This was a bronze idol that was found in Syria of Asherah, but the Asherah poles are believed to have looked very much like that, 6 to 8 feet tall, carved out of wood, just standing all over the land, looking just like that. And so God says, Gideon, here's the thing. You're going to be a hero that's going to rescue my people from the Midianites. You're going to rescue your people who are in bondage, who are being attacked over and over again. But the first thing I want you to do is not to go out and build an army. The first thing I want you to do is not to go out and raise support, get your weapons, get your armor. The first thing I want you to do is to go out into your father's land, and I want you to tear down his idols. I want you to destroy the altar to Baal. I want you to cut down the Asherah pole, and I want you to use the wood of that Asherah pole as the fire to sacrifice to me on a brand new altar that you are going to build to me. Complication. And here's why it's a complication. In Judges 6, 27, the next verse, you'll see this. So Gideon took 10 of his servants, and he did as the Lord had commanded, but he did it at night because he was afraid of the other members of his father's household and the people of the town. So this is why it's complicated. Gideon is not just doing this, you know, and everyone's just going to say, oh, thank you, Gideon, for tearing down the altars to our gods who we believe take care of us and provide for us. Oh, you've opened our eyes. Bless you, Gideon, kissing his feet. Oh, you're so great. No, no, no. Gideon knows this. Gideon knows that he is going out and messing with a status quo that people do not want messed with. He is tearing down the altars and the idols of the gods to these people. the gods that these people pray to, the gods that these people worship, the gods that these people think will get mad at them if they don't honor and mess them up. And so Gideon, right out of the gate, he's doing, I mean, think about leadership 101, right? If you're going to go out and you're going to lead a big group of people, you're going to find a big group of people, diverse opinions, diverse thought, and you're going to, you know, lead them to change and to freedom and something big and awesome. You know, think Braveheart. You're going to paint half your face blue and you're just going to do something awesome. You know, what is the first thing you're going to do? The first thing you're going to do is not to tick them off by, you know, kicking their gods in the face. You're going to build consensus, right? You're going to, hey, guys, we're pulling together for this common goal. Let's be friends and let's all work together. And you're going to leave some of that stuff to the side. You know, you're not going to mess with the sacred cows. What does God want Gideon to do right out of the gate? He says, hey, Gideon, I want you to go to that sacred cow and just kick it in the face and, you know, then spit on it, you know, and tell everyone that it's stupid. To their faces. That's what God is telling Gideon to do. And Gideon knows this. Gideon knows that people are going to be ticked. And so Gideon does what any smart person would do. He does it when nobody's looking. So he sneaks out at night with all of his servants and he tears down the gods of the people that he needs to support him. He needs, this is his town, right? These are his people. This is his family. These are the people that he's close to, and he needs their support if he's going to lead Israel to freedom and victory over the Midianites. The very goal that God has set before him, he needs them to accomplish. But he goes about it completely the opposite way because God asks him to. And the reason he does that is because Gideon recognized this and God recognized this. The cause of their problem was not bad neighbors. You know, the cause of their problem was not that the Midianites were just, you know, a bad nation next to them and want to attack them. If they could just deal with their bad neighbors, things would be okay. The cause of their problem was their idolatry. The cause of their problem was that they weren't looking to God first and they put other gods before him. Just like he had told them before they went into the land. That was the problem. And the deal with the Israelites is this. They've been suffering for 7 years under these attacks over and over and over again. But they were consistently dealing with the symptoms instead of dealing with the problem. They kept thinking to themselves, if we can just hide, if we can just keep our crops here, if, you know, maybe we can build a resistance and we can try to defeat them and everything will be okay. But they were dealing with the symptom. The Midianites were just the symptoms. The problem was their idolatry, and they didn't want to deal with their problem. I mean, think about this. Let's put this in today's vernacular. Let's say that, you know, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, came out tomorrow, and they said, hey, guys, we got a big problem. We just found out that if you drink coffee, your feet will fall off your body, okay? So the more coffee you drink, literally your feet are just going to shrivel up and fall off. Like, there's a ton of people in this room. You're like, oh, my gosh, if drinking coffee is going to make my feet fall off, I'd better start learning how to walk on my hands or buy stock in a wheelchair company because I'm not stopping drinking coffee. Because you're like, coffee's my jam, and I'm going to treat the symptoms, okay? I'm not going to treat the problem. And that's what the Israelites are doing right now. They're saying, you know what? We'll deal with the Midianites. We'll deal with the food. But look, we can't turn away from these. What if we make Baal mad? If we make Baal mad, things will get worse, right? What if we make Asherah angry and then all of a sudden we don't have any crops and the Midianites come in and they take what little we have and then we starve and our people are dying even more because we don't have anything to eat? We can't do that. We can't deal with this because if we do, things will be worse for us because then our gods are going to be after us too. Here's the thing. Let me step out of the story a little bit. You know, put yourself in Gideon's shoes. I want you to know this. In your life, your faith is going to put you at odds with certain people. Your faith in God, your relationship with Jesus, if you have one, is going to put you at odds with certain people in your life. There are going to be people, hey man, if you're new in a relationship with God, if you've just started it, maybe you don't totally know this yet. Let me tell you, there are going to be people who don't like the changes that are happening in your life. There are going to be people who don't want you to change because they want you to hang out with them. They want you to do the things that you did with them before. And then if you start changing, if your life starts changing because of your relationship with God, you know, they're going to feel judged. They're going to feel like you're condemning them for continuing on and maybe sinful activities or behaviors that you were involved in before just because your life is changing. Your relationship with Jesus is going to affect other people because they're going to look at you and they're going to think you're judgmental. They're going to think you're intolerant. They're going to think that you're harsh. They're going to think that you're weak. They're going to think you're selfish. Your faith, it will put you at odds with other people. It's just going to happen. And we can see that in the life of Gideon. God changed his identity. God redefined Gideon's relationship with him. And as a result, there was a whole segment of his population, the people in the town he lived with, not only people in the town he lived with, his family, those idols were his dad's. That was his father's altar to Baal. It was his father's Asherah pole. His father, his family leader, his clan leader, the person with all the authority in the family to say and do whatever whatever he wanted to do. What he said was law. The family did what he said. And Gideon went out, the youngest of his family, the weakest of his family. And he defied his father. He defied his family and he defied the people around them. Not only did he defy them and their gods, but he did it in such a way that they were afraid that those gods would be angry at them and bring down punishment on him. And listen, there's going to be times where your faith is going to put you at odds with people in your life. And it wasn't an easy choice for Gideon, which is why he went out in the middle of the night and he tore that stuff down. It was not easy for him to make this decision, but he knew something. He knew that if his relationship with God had changed, that something in his action, something in his life, something in his behavior had to change as well. Check this out. The story continues in Judges chapter 6, 28 through 30. Early the next morning, as the people of the town began to stir, someone discovered that the altar of Baal had been broken down and that the Asherah pole beside it had been cut down. So, you know, there's some go-getter, you know, wanting to like brown nose to Baal and get his sacrifices in at like 5 in the morning and say, hey, I'm the best. You know, he gets up early and he sees this. He's like, what? So he goes and tells everybody. He sees that in their place, a new altar had been built, an altar to the Lord that Gideon built. And on it were the remains of the bull that had been sacrificed. I mean, let's just take another step back to forget the religious aspect of it. Gideon like stole his dad's property and like killed it. I mean, how would you feel if like your kids just killed your dog and said, I'm sacrificing to the Lord, Dad? I would actually like that. I don't like my dogs very much, but that... I did not expect a response that heavy. But I'm serious. Okay, so they see this, and then the people said to each other, who did this? And after asking around, I mean, dude, think about this. Who did this? The pitchforks are coming out, right? People with torches. I mean, it's 8 in the morning, but they don't care. Pitchforks and torches. It's just what you do when you attack somebody like that. And so they're looking, and they're trying to figure it out. And after looking around and asking and making a careful search, they learned that it was Gideon, the son of Joash. Bring out your son, the men of the town demanded of Joash. He must die for destroying the altar of Baal and for cutting down the Asherah pole. So like, is this why Gideon did it in the middle of the night? Because he thought maybe no one will know it was me? Because he knew this like, oh, they're going to want to kill me. I'm a dead man if I do this. And again, like think about it just from a human perspective. What a stupid way to start a campaign where people are supposed to follow you to rescuing a nation from an attacking nation next door. I mean, what a dumb way to do this. I mean, he can't lead Israel if he's dead or if people hate his guts and want him dead. But this is what happened in Judges 6:31. But Joash, his father, he shouted to the mob that confronted him and he said this, why are you defending Baal? Will you argue his case? Whoever pleads his case will be put to death by morning, because if Baal is truly a god, let him defend himself and destroy the one who broke down his altar. So from then on, so basically Gideon's dad says this. He says, look, okay, Baal can defend himself. And if Baal's really the god that we think he is, and a lot of them were like, well, he is the god we think he is. He's like, okay, great, because maybe, you know, Gideon's dad might have thought this too. But if Baal's the god we think he is, then let him fight this battle himself. If Baal's in power and Baal knows that Gideon did this, then let Baal take care of it and let Baal kill Gideon. And I'm sure as Joash said this, he's like, yeah, Baal will kill Gideon if he did it. In the back of his mind, he's like, oh man, I hope that this isn't true that my son lives. And in the other half of his mind, he's like, there might be a lightning bolt. I'm going to take 3 steps this way away from you, son. But after this, it says this, that after this, the people agreed to this and let Gideon go. And they said, from then on, Gideon was called Jerubbaal, which means let Baal defend himself, because he broke down Baal's altar. So at the end of this, the altar's torn down. Gideon acts in such a way that God told him to do. The relationship, the new relationship and new identity he had in God, he acted on it. The people didn't like it. Gideon knew the people weren't going to like it, but he had to be obedient to God. He knew God wanted him to do. And then at the end of it, we can see this, that God got Gideon's back and God took care of Gideon and he carried him through it. And we know this, like from reading this story, that in Gideon's heart, he knew that if he was God's guy, if he was God's man for the job, if he was the person God was calling out to do something amazing, to do something incredible in the nation of Israel, that would require change on his part. He knew that it was going to require action. He knew it was going to require something different. He also knew this, that God was going to get his back. He knew that God was going to take care of him, because he knew this, that God had huge plans for Gideon. You see, God's plans for Gideon, they didn't just start with him getting a new identity and stop there. You know what I mean? And like for some of us, I think that when we look at a relationship with God and when we look at religion, it's easy to just step into the edge of the river, right? And just think, okay, I'm a follower of Jesus. I'm a Christian now. And so, hey, that's good. Okay, so anyway, as I was saying, and then just go back to life as usual. But here's the thing. Gideon knew that this new identity, this new relationship, it couldn't just start and stop with the transformation of who he was. That following that first change had to come a change in his life. When God redefines your identity, when God redefines your relationship with him, it always leads to action. It always leads to change. And Gideon, his relationship status with God had changed. But Gideon knew that he couldn't hide behind it's complicated, right? Because he could have. Gideon could have said, well, God, listen. Okay, so the altar and the Asherah pole, I mean, people think those are pretty important. And God, I know they're stupid and they're just dumb looking, and I know you're Lord. But listen, it's complicated. God, if I tear those things down, the people are going to be mad at me. And look, let's just bring them along on a journey, you know? We'll just gradually introduce the idea that I'm your guy. And let's just take it slow because, God, it's complicated. Gideon knew he couldn't hide behind it's complicated anymore. He knew that his faith and his relationship with God required change because it wasn't complicated anymore. And the reason it wasn't complicated is this. And again, if there's one point you get out of this. It's that faith always starts with a step, which always followed by another step. Always. Faith always starts with a step, which is always followed by another. So in Gideon's life, we can see this. The first step is this. God changes his identity, changes the status of his relationship. But it didn't stop there because that first step is always followed by another step. It's always followed by another action step. Think about faith like this. You know, think about climbing to the top of the Empire State Building, right? In the stairwell. So you're like calves and thighs are burning and you just want to die. So you're just at the top of the stairwell, right? Then you take a slinky and you just drop it down that first step. What happens to that slinky? It just keeps going. Step, 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 step. If a slinky could take curves, which our slinky can take curves, just you have to imagine that. It turns around and it goes down and just like a slinky just going down every step and it's just going and going and going. And that is our relationship with God. That's your faith. That's what your faith is supposed to look like because your faith is always a step followed by another step followed by another step. Let me illustrate this. We can see this principle explored in the New Testament more in the book of James. Now, James, the guy who's writing this letter, he's writing it to the churches. This letter written by a guy named James, James was the head of the church in Jerusalem. He kind of just became the de facto bishop of the first church, and people looked to him as the leader. And this letter that we're going to read from is the first letter that was ever really written out to the church at large when the church is just beginning. And so this is the first thing that people are looking at and saying, this is how we're supposed to live as followers of Jesus. And this is how we're supposed to live out our faith. This is how we're supposed to live out our relationships with other people. It's the oldest letter written in all of the New Testament. And James says this about what it means when it comes to acting on who God says you are. He says, what good is it, dear brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith, but don't show it by your actions? Can that kind of faith save anyone? Suppose you see a brother or sister who's had no food or clothing and you say, you know, goodbye, have a good day, stay warm, eat well. But then you don't give that person food or clothing. What good does that do? So you see, faith by itself isn't enough. Unless it produces good deeds, it's dead and useless. I love that first sentence. What good is it, brothers and sisters? What good is your faith if it isn't followed by action? What good is the first step of your belief in Jesus, the faith that you put in him, if it's not followed by the next step and the step after that and the step after that? He continues here in James 2, 19 through 20. I love this. This is such powerful language, but this speaks to how important this is. He says, you say you have faith because you believe there's one God. Well, hey, good for you. Even the demons believe this and they tremble in terror. And he says, how foolish, which I wish he just said, how stupid. Even the demons believe this. You know, how stupid. Can't you see that faith without good deeds is useless? So he's like, listen, okay, you say you believe in Jesus. You say you believe in God. That's great, man. That's a great first step. Well, guess what? Demons believe that. So, okay, so good job. You're basically a demon right now. What's next for you? Are you going to sit there and stay there? Because listen, if your faith is not followed by action, if your faith is not followed by change, if your faith doesn't look like Gideon, where you say, I have a new relationship with God, that status has changed, my identity in Jesus is different, but it's not followed by a step, well, then it's as good as dead. How stupid. Here's the thing. Gideon believed what God said, and then he acted on it. He was obedient to what God said. He changed. And faith without change is a thought experiment. I mean, faith without change is just an experiment in religious belief. You know, it's wishful thinking. It's having a positive attitude. That's what faith without action is. And that's not the life that God has for you. God doesn't want your life to be one where you're just constantly living it out saying, man, I just got to stay positive today and really just believe. Man, I believe in Jesus. I just believe. And that's just where you're at. That's not the kind of life God wants for you. God wants you to have a life that's powerful, that's transformative, that's full of joy. Listen, when God redefined your identity, He didn't redefine it just so you could be the same person. God has an enormous plan and purpose for your life. The Bible says this, that God's plan and purpose for you is too great for you even to imagine. You think when you're kids and you're imagining the biggest dream that you could have, the biggest thing that could ever happen in your life. Man, those big dreams were huge. And God says, the plan I have for you, that's chump change what you were just thinking about. But it's a plan that requires step after step after step of following Jesus. And some of us, here's the thing, here's what we do. We tend to overcomplicate our relationship with God and our relationship with Jesus. You know, I really believe in you, Jesus, but I was in this relationship when I became a follower of Jesus, and you know, I know it's not a right relationship, and I know that we're sexually active and it's inappropriate and it's sinful, but listen, it's complicated. If I break that off, you know, I don't want to hurt feelings, and Jesus, it's just a complicated scenario. I know it's harmful, but listen, it's complicated. You don't understand. And you know, Lord, I believe in you, Jesus, and I give in the offering, but I know what I'm like at work, but God, sometimes you just got to be cutthroat in the work environment to get ahead, and I got to provide for my family, right? I got to do these things. I got to do this to get ahead. And you know, God, I know I'm engaged in some pretty sick and messed up stuff, you know, on the internet or stuff that my family doesn't know about, but God, it's complicated. I've got an addictive personality, and it's just tough for me to let those things go. God, it's complicated. We overcomplicate things because we don't believe that God will do what he said he was going to do. Because we think that if we tear down those altars, we think that if we tear down the Asherah poles in our lives, that there's just going to be revolt, that everything's going to fall apart. Because we don't believe that God's going to get our back. And so it's complicated. Man, some of us, it's not even just an issue of, you know, a sin issue, stuff that we don't want to deal with in our lives. For some of us, maybe it's just fear. Some of you have things you know God wants you to do. You know it. You know, there's a step, maybe there's a financial step that you need to take where, you know, you need to be smarter with your resource. Maybe God's calling you to be a tither and to be generous with your money. Maybe God's calling you to buy 500 packages of underwear for our summer of underwear and put them out in that box. But you're like, God, it's complicated. First of all, it's a lot of money. And what are people going to think of me if I buy 500 packages of kids' underwear? That's just weird. It's complicated, God. You know what, God? I know you're calling me to this step in my career, but it's complicated. I've got tenure, I've got status, I've got seniority. You know, I make a good living now, and if I do this, there's no guarantee that I'm going to make the same money. God, it's complicated. God, I know you're calling me to get involved and serve in this area of church. I know, God, you're calling me to get involved and serve a people group in our community. I know you're calling me to tell someone about you as part of the Compass 5005 deal. But God, it's complicated. I don't want to be embarrassed. And if I do that and they think I'm stupid, I got to see that person at work every day. God, it's complicated. And God's saying, listen, it's not complicated. It's very, very simple. Step one, you believe and your relationship status with me changes. When that relationship status changes, your action changes. Listen, so let's talk about me and Terry again. So it was very complicated with me and Terry when we started dating. It was very complicated. But then here's the thing. There was a moment at which I knew I wanted to marry her. And when that moment came, for me mentally, that relationship status changed. And so then I asked her to marry me. And when that ring was on her finger, when we were engaged, when Terry was now my fiance, and our relationship status went up as engaged, it changed everything for us. Our relationship changed our actions. Our relationship changed our behavior. From that moment on, there was nobody else. There was no one else to look at. There was no one else to think about. It was Terry, and that's it. The status changed how I behaved. It changed how I treated her. It changed how I treated other women. It changed how I acted and worked in the world. And can you imagine if it hadn't? Can you imagine if engagement had just been a status change, but it didn't change action? Some of you can. Can you imagine what it would be like to be married and have your relationship status changed, but your actions and behaviors don't? Some of us know very well what that feels like, and we know the hurt and the pain of that. And listen, that's why God's saying to you right now, your relationship with me has changed. I've given you a new identity. I've given you a new purpose. I've given you a new calling. And listen, it's time to step out in that. It's time to own it and believe it and be bold. And you know, it's okay if you want to sneak out at night and do it, you know, undercover, but just do it. Just do it. Faith requires action. It requires change. And whether that change is a change that you know you need to do, but you didn't want to let go of because it means you're going to have to let go of a relationship that maybe you value, but it's a damaging, sinful relationship. It's a hurtful relationship, and you may like it in the moment, but in the long run, it's hurting you and it's hurting your family. Maybe you don't want to let go of something because you're scared you're not going to have the resources to take care of yourself. You're afraid to give. You're afraid to live open-handed and be generous because you're scared of what might happen. And so you live saying, God, I know you're asking me to let go and open my hands, but if I do, I won't have something for myself. And so rather than having hands that God can pour more into, you're just hoarding it and keeping it. You're hiding out in a cave or in the bottom of a wine press with your little bits of grain. And God's saying, I don't want you to just hoard what little food you have. I want to get rid of the army that's coming against you so you can live in abundance if you just open your hands. Maybe God's calling you to do something that's terrifying to you. A career change, a life change, something you've been putting off because you didn't think you could. Well, guess what? Gideon was a chicken hiding out. And we're going to find out in the next several weeks the amazing things that God did in his life when he trusted God and he took the step. God's saying this, take the step, because faith always starts with a step, which is always followed by another. Let's be slinkies. Let's live as slinkies because it's not complicated. It's not complicated. Are you willing to look at your relationship status and say, God, I want to be that person? So show me what I need to do. Show me what I need to change. Show me how to be obedient to you because I want to live a life like Gideon. I want to live a life that's transformed. I want to live a life where everyone in my world knows that I've taken a public step to follow Jesus. That's what our baptism service tonight is all about. It's about people who have said, I have decided to follow Jesus and I want the world to know. Are you ready to do that? Let me pray for you. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for what you're doing in us, what you're doing through us. And I thank you for the word that you're speaking into our lives. And Lord, I know this, that this may be a little more challenging. Not just something that you're trying to give to us, God, but something that you're calling us to, that you're calling us to change, that you're calling us to be different. That a life of following you can never be status quo, but that a life of following you is always going to require steps of faith, steps of obedience, and steps of change. God, they may be scary, but God, I know this, that when we step out in faith and when you get us, that our lives are transformed. And so I pray, Lord, for those people here in this room this morning who know in their minds that thing you want them to change. God, I pray that you bring it to them so clearly they know exactly what it is, that you'd call it up in every heart and mind. God, I pray that as you bring that thing clearly to mind, that as we leave this place, we would leave as people who are willing to be transformed and changed. That we are not going to be people who look at the landscape of our lives and see it dotted with altars to pagan gods and dotted with poles to ourselves that are worship to the things that we hold dear to ourselves. But God, that instead we would tear those things down and take the steps of faith to follow you. Knowing we can trust you, knowing that you're with us, knowing that you'll never abandon us, that you'll never leave us or forsake us. And God, whether it's in the real world or whether it's across a social media landscape, God, I pray this. I pray that when people see us, they would know that we are followers of Jesus. They would know that we are people who tear down idols, and they may disagree with it and they may hate it, but God, when they look at us, they know there's something different, and deep down they want it. God, we pray all of this in your awesome name, Jesus, thanking you for all you've done and thanking you for what you're going to continue to do in us. In your name, Jesus, we pray. Amen.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compasspn.com.